Wisconsin's a mine of artistic gold. Places and people, lo and behold, it's an honest-to-goodness melting pot. Attention, artisans, let's see what you got. Which will make English teachers cringe, but we're always colloquial. That's better. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Perambulating. English teachers rejoice on that one. Perambulating into your day with news, views, and personalities engaged in the abundant arts and culture of Western Wisconsin. You know, listener support makes everything you enjoy on WPR possible. We hope you value Spectrum West and all WPR programs, so please make your contributions at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift is so important, and thank you. This week on Spectrum West, Bill Nolte, proprietor of The Joint in Eau Claire, on life, liberty, and the pursuit of anything but a monotonous existence. He's hit a longevity landmark, and we take stock of where he's been and going. We're going to get an update on how the Widespot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm is emerging from pandemic performing dormancy. There's a show this Saturday, as a matter of fact. And we begin with something of which I believe you are all aware. I've been getting updates from so many of the organizations and ensembles that dot our West Wisconsin landscape on how they've fared during, of all things we never expected, yes, a pandemic. Well, I asked Gary Schwartzoff, artistic director, founding conductor of the Master Singers, to tell us their story.
Well, as an ensemble, we went to YouTube and put on some files from over the past probably 20 years. Mm-hmm. Getting the ensemble back together is a challenge. There are individuals concerned about COVID and being together, despite the fact that the CDC and the American Choral Directors Association have indicated it is acceptable to be together, even lack of social distancing, singing together, masks. Recommended, not required. We are using masks in every rehearsal and intend to sing the concert with masks.
You'd have to think, given what we've been through and how long it's been, someone came up with a singing mask. Is there such a thing?
Yes, there is. And most of them are wearing such a mask. There are masks specifically for singing. They're a larger bill, if you would, to the mask, providing some sort of resonant space, but nonetheless, it has to get through the cloth at some point. But yes, many of the members of the ensemble do have those and wear them.
Good. I know about practicing when it comes to playing an instrument. I don't think I've ever asked you this before. What is practicing like for a singer?
That would be the life of a solo artist, I mean, who practices on their own on a continual basis. In terms of our method of rehearsing, we're pretty much like before. The only difference is they're wearing a mask when we come together to do it.
Dr. Gary Schwartzoff with us, the Master Singers 29th season. About to get underway. It begins Sunday, October 3rd, 2 p.m., Pablo Center at the Confluence. Now, I know that it appears as if it had to have been determined to be virtual quite a while ago, because your brochure itself lists it as virtual. You made that decision back when?
Back as early as May. Hmm. For a couple reasons. Primarily, COVID is the governing factor here. Sure. Of why this concert is being done virtual. We also wanted to say to the community a thank you for being with us throughout the 29 years, but certainly during the last two when we were unable to perform live. And the last scheduled concert of this ensemble was in March 2020. The concert was canceled a Thursday night before Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those patrons obviously had their tickets in advance. We are doing this as a thank you and a payback to them to bring us back into the concert arena.
Good.
The concert actually is being recorded earlier to make it possible for everyone to listen on their playback device.
America, My Home 2021. It's called Sing Gently. Is anybody out there, as far as composing goes, coming up with music that is relative to the stuff that we've been going through in the last year and a half? Are there songs being written about our enduring a pandemic?
Yes, I would say so. As a matter of fact, Sing Gently is such a song.
Ah.
Eric Whitaker put this together some time ago for purposes of of a virtual choir. I mean, he did this initially with his online people that he works with continually to create an experience such as this. Specifically, on March of 2020, as COVID began the crisis, this piece put together a virtual choir of 17,500 initially premiered this work in July 19th, 2020. So Eric wrote it for the purpose of bringing people together that were unable to come together to sing. And if you can imagine, a virtual choir is difficult to begin with when you're doing it with everyone in their own homes. But, you know, this concert here being virtual is being recorded with the ensemble together, just being broadcast at a later time. There are other pieces which to us lend itself to that. That's the programming that you'll see on this concert.
Okay. How do people access this concert?
They have to register to do this. It's a very easy login. You go to the Pablo Center website, pablocenter.com. There's a click button to take you to that format, ask you for your name, your email, I think that's it. And then they send you the link to actually have your own way of accessing the concerts on October the 3rd at 2 p.m.
And our fingers are crossed for other concerts in this, your 29th season. Hopefully we'll be able to see you guys live down there on the stage. Gary, you have perspective of having been involved since the very beginning. Tell me about your personal perspective, given the experience of dealing with something so unexpected and so profound as this, the pandemic. I talk about enduring and adjusting all the time with people. Your impression, a proud one, I'm sure, of how the Master Singers, the organization, has managed and grown, because we took a lot of things for granted before this happened, but probably not anymore.
Well, you're absolutely correct. There are real challenges here to an arts organization surviving, period, in this day and age, but throw a pandemic in that mix, and it's another whole level of concern and dealing first and foremost with people's health. We were one of the first ones to cancel that March date in 2020 in our last rehearsal. I said to the officers, I'm not sure we can do this. What's happening across the country suggests we should be shutting down right now. And that's what we did. Who would have thought that this would have went on for this long? We have been rehearsing at the Pablo Center for reasons of space and air quality. We do intend to return to First Congregation Church as our rehearsal place in October following this concert. You know, those are real concerns. You don't want to contribute to issues in people's health by the way we meet and rehearse. So we've tried to go the extra mile and be cautious, conducting ourselves in a manner that wouldn't create more health concerns.
Well, you're called the Master Singers. A few connotations. You master predicaments. As I said, our fingers are crossed for other concerts in the 29th season. And I look forward to talking with you about those and before them. The next one would be the holiday concert. Let's hope that we can sing out loud and go maskless and do it in person. Gary, thanks. Have a great 29th season.
Thank you, Al.
Dr. Gary Schwartzoff, director of the Master Singers. And again, pablocenter.com. That's where you go to link up to their virtual concert. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. So glad you're able to join us. Hang out as long as you can. It's member drive time here at WPR. This hour, we only have a few seconds to ask for your support of the station you love. You count on WPR to make a difference in your day, to inform and entertain you. Now you can support the radio that you rely on. So make your difference at WPR.org or by phone at 888-202-2552. And thank you, thank you, thank you. Here's a memo for you. Don't forget, at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls, Goldilocks on Trial, playing through Sunday. Reserve tickets and information at festivaltheater.org. The Wide Spot Performing Arts Center is getting back to the business of bringing top-notch entertainment to the people who live along or frequent the beauty of the Mississippi River shoreline. They have a show this Saturday and more coming. So a call to Fred Harding, who speaks on its behalf, was in order. We have not talked with and about the Wide Spot during our entertainment downtime. You have a tight-knit group that conceived the wide spot and holds it together. And oddly enough, serious times can be galvanizing. How have the last many months been for broadening your perspective on what it means to hold something together?
I want you to picture March of 2020. Wide Spot was gearing up for our spring play. We'd been rehearsing. Everybody was working hard and the sets were being built and everything was going together. It became more and more clear that I should be talking to the good folks at the Pepin County Health Department. Eventually, it became very clear that 110 people in an auditorium was not going to be a good idea.
Yeah.
And at that point, we're going to postpone. It kept getting postponed and postponed. I think I rebooked some performing artists 2 and 3 times. And you'd look at it and say, well, surely by September, we'll have this thing figured out. Surely by January, we'll have this thing figured out.
What was the managing group of the Wide Spot doing through all those postponements?
We talked about stuff, and we continued to talk about stuff by Zoom. We were trying to figure out what was happening. It became clear there was going to be some potential relief money available. Ann Katz, director of, I want to say it's Arts Wisconsin, is the name of her organization, sent out an email and said, hey, you know what? There's some money coming. I think our application was the first one in. Quite frankly, those funds did what needed to happen. They kept our employees, front of house manager, office administrator paid. Both of them were very pleasantly surprised. Mm-hmm. We said, hey, we're going to be able to keep paying you. The other thing that we did is we put a force majeure clause into our contract. If indeed an act of God happened, we could cancel.
Going back to all those surelys you gave us a while ago, it didn't happen. You know, surely we're going to be open by this and by this. And
oh,
by this.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you found that the stopgap funds were enough to get you through to where you are now.
Yeah, we've traditionally been supported very well by the community. Ticket prices are a part of our revenue, but we do a fund appeal every year, and last year we did it. Gosh, they work. So we were able to keep our landlords happy and pay our bills, and it wasn't fun, but we were able to come out of the pandemic reasonably healthy, not doing anything.
Kind of like the song, New York, New York. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. And if you can make it through a pandemic, you should be okay for just about anything going forward. You must be real confident.
We're feeling pretty good, yeah. As a matter of fact. During that pandemic, our landlord came up to us and said, we're not going to raise our rents. And I want to thank Alan and Steve from Stockholm Pie for being kind that way. They did some remodeling, and we adjusted the position of our stage a little bit. And we put some acoustic paneling in place to improve the sound quality.
Good.
You know, it's not like all we did was sit and look at our Facebook account. I mean, the reality was we were busy doing stuff.
Good. As everybody was. Smart on your part. We're on the phone with Fred Harding, and he's a spokes guy for the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in beautiful Stockholm, Wisconsin. Fred, you have a show this Saturday. Who's coming?
We have a show by a group called Jackknife and the Sharps, a band that's been playing together, since the early 90s in the region. It's a rockabilly band. What that means is you're going to see a guy playing a doghouse bass, and he may even climb on that doggone thing.
Ooh.
It's been known to happen. You're going to see people having fun, and it's going to be a good time. That's what we've got coming up immediately. And then after that, a number of other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pretty gosh darn happy with what's happening. It's like you're putting your toes in the water to see what the heck is happening. And, you know, yes, we are indeed limiting the number of people who can attend. That just seems to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of 125, we're going to limit our seats to 66. We've set up requirements that people who attend show proof of vaccination as well as wear masks. That was something that, quite frankly, required some thought, but I talked to people around the country in similar positions. They were all saying the same gosh darn thing. They said, you've got to protect your audience.
Smart stuff. And I suggest, and I think you back me on this, that people should go for the best information online to widespot.org. Is your schedule still flexible and still taking shape?
The fall part of the schedule, actually, the granite has been carved, so to speak. The winter spring is in process. It's about 90% done. Our goal is, again, to provide a variety of different acts, different styles. We're certainly trying to do it. I'm trying to show things that people may not be familiar with, but once they see them, they'll go, yeah, I want to see that again.
Good. I kind of thought that calling and finding out about what Widespot was doing would be good news, and it did turn out that way. Fred, thanks for being with us on Spectrum West, and keep us in the loop, and we'll keep telling people who's coming to the Widespot, because it's a fun place.
That's great. Thanks very much. I'll talk to you later, sir.
This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. Good to be with you. We're on a member drive, and it's time to ask for your vital support of the WPR programs you're passionate about. Hope Spectrum West is one of those. I know I'm passionate about it. Whatever your reason for giving, in-depth news, interesting talk, inspiring music, well, now's the time to contribute. Your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 pays for your own listening and also makes WPR available to everyone. Thank you very much. Again, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 52. Coming up, we have a conversation with the one and only Mr. Bill Nolte. And I think what we ought to do first is listen to a little of music by Ahmad Jamal, who, back in 1974, was Bill Nolte's first musical guest at the joint. We're going to cover a lot of it coming up. Every now and then, the idea of spending time with someone who's been part of the fabric of Western Wisconsin for a long time, well, that appeals to me, and I hope it does to you as well. Recently, when I heard that Bill Nolte is now 80 years old, first I said, he can't be 80. He's kind of the same guy he was 20 years ago. Secondly, I knew he's one of the aforementioned fabric figures, and it was time we sat down to talk in the place that's helped make him illustrious. Please note that he would refute any sycophantic adjectives used to describe his success as a human being. Situated in a front corner of the joint on Water Street in Eau Claire, his home below his home for nearly 50 years, as we fade out to the music of Ahmad Jamal, his first musical guest, I said, in 1974, we begin with how it all began. So you bought the place, and you redid it a bit. You
cleaned it up.
Cleaned it up.
Yeah, it was.
Which you're good at.
It's
here.
Needed cleaning. Yeah.
And then you reopened the place.
I think that it's quite possible. We're not sure, but I think it's quite possible that I have taken more cigarette butts out of urinals than any other Ivy League graduate in the history of the Ivy League Brotherhood.
Got to be recognition for
I
that.
I think somewhere. It's got to be true, doesn't it? I mean, I'd like to find another guy that went to an Ivy League college or any other college, for that matter, that's owned a bar for 50 years.
What Ivy League school did you go to?
I went to Dartmouth College.
Wow. Okay, so let's go back. We're back at the place where you opened and you cleaned it up a little bit. Did you know what kind of a place you wanted it to be, or did you just wanted to have a bar?
No, I just liked bars. And I had an idea because I'd been in a few. So, for instance, I could point to almost everything in here and say, well, that chair you're sitting on came from the Old Town Ale House in Chicago. That was the first place my friends and I, we had fake IDs, and we could go in and drink dark beer and listen to jazz and not cause any trouble. And those were the kind of chairs they had there. So when I got here, I said, oh, boy, I got to get those chairs. So now those are the same chairs I've had here for 50 years.
No
so that's how we ended up with stuff. Those white stools there in the middle of the bar are from Pearson's Cafe, which was down next to the State Theater. And I went down there when they were closing it because it had been there for 40 years and had some things at auction, and those stools were $1 a piece, and I bought them. And they've been here now for 50 years.
Wow. Yeah. How do you get things to last so long, man?
You just fix them when they're broken.
Oh, you take care of
it. And then there were certain chairs right there, these right here next to this safe. Those came from the last pool hall that was existing in Eau Claire as an old-fashioned local Middle Western pool hall.
Let's start the music part. You opened this place, and then
I was sitting over in that corner over there opposite where we are. I had by that time gotten my own jukebox. Somebody else owned the jukebox. And would come in and put 5 new 45s on a month. Mm. Well, that wasn't quite doing it because I'd always been a music fan.
Sure.
So I bought a jukebox and started putting my own music on it. I would bother people. If we were driving around in a neighborhood and there was a thrift sale, I made them stop the car because if they had 45s, and then I would have to go through all of them. Because it wasn't easy to get alternative music on 45s. It was always top 40 stuff. So one of these 45s was an Ahmad Jamal 45, which, and I'd heard him in Chicago, and so I put that on the jukebox, Poinciana. Yeah. I was over there talking to a guy, and he used to book music at Ohio State. And I said, I'd like to put somebody in here. And Ahmad Jamal came up, and I said, let's get this guy. Well, that was kind of a joke. Ahmad Jamal was a big deal. And he said, are you serious? And he walked down to the other end of the room and put a quarter in or maybe it was a dime then, in the payphone and called Ahmad Jamal's manager. And in 20 minutes, I was talking to him. He didn't trust me at first. Why would he? Some bozo calls from the middle of nowhere. I had no sound system. I had nothing. And then Jimmy Solberg's brother, they were in town. They had sound because they traveled. And we put a speaker there and there, and we got an amplifier. And then I rented a piano from Minneapolis. They brought it over in a pickup truck, oddly enough.
Oh, my God.
And moved it in here, and that was the first show we had.
Did you have an intent to have live music?
No,
from
I was
going to
do that show, and then we were done.
That was it.
It was so good. Boy, what if we could just do this and pay for the band? Get enough people to pay. Well, I never paid for the band.
So then you got Ramblin' Jack Elliott next.
Yeah, because I knew him from music when I was a kid.
You took about 4 months to get somebody
else. Yeah, well, I wasn't in a hurry because I knew how much it was going to cost. I was a fan of Ramblin' Jack Elliott's. And Bill Kelly, who used to write for the paper here, wrote about Ahmad Jamal in the Eau Claire Leader. And I made a copy of that article. There was a booking agents magazine, and I went through that and circled the people that I knew that I liked, and I just sent them a copy of the article and said, I'm looking to do some music. As soon as you do that, you get a lot of attention because their job is to book their bands. So when somebody came up with Jack Elliott, well, what was I going to say? No. It was just like Mingus, the same thing. I was getting to a price. Let's see, could we do this? And the money wasn't close. Well, it was really close, but at the time, I put the phone down and I said to somebody, boy, that was Charles Mingus, manager, and we're $200 apart. The guy said to me, you said no? You said no to Charles Mingus for $200? And I said, yeah, you're right. And I called right back. I said, sorry, I changed my mind.
There's this perception that you had mostly jazz musicians, but you had some of the most iconic folk musicians here over time. And blues.
Yeah, John Lee Hooker was here, and yeah.
You had Tom Paxton here.
Yeah, Tom, and those folk guys. Yeah.
I found it interesting when I noticed that Mary Travers was here in 82. Who did she sing with?
She came with a band, piano, bass, and drums. And she was kind of unpleasant.
Really?
She did a great show.
Was she kind of a torch singer?
Very unpleasant
when she was
woman.
With that band?
No, she sang a lot of the stuff that Peter, Paul, and Mary sang. It was a great show. But she was very, yeah. But I asked people who knew her afterwards. I was on my way down to Camaraderie with David Van Ronk to get, he wanted to get something to eat, and I asked him about Mary Travers. I said, tell me something about Mary Travers. I wasn't going to spill the beans about how she'd been.
Yeah.
And he said, well, Mary's not very happy, you know. I said, well, I found that out. He said, I have one question for you. Why Mary Travers? Because I had Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee here, yeah, and Odetta and Dave Van Ronk, all those originals. Frankly, Mary Travers never wrote a song in her life, and she didn't play an instrument. Mm-hmm. I love Peter, Paul, and Mary. You know, I was growing up, the Kingston Trio and all that. When Dave Van Ronk said, why Mary? I said, well, because I knew I could sell that show in a heartbeat, and yeah, I really liked her. And that would get people to come here who might not come here, who don't know who Tom Paxton was, or yeah, don't know who Sonny Terry and Brian McGee are. And they would come here and they'd say, oh, that was great, I'd like to go back. That's a large part of why, okay, I did it. So if you look around the corner there before you leave, you'll see a picture of Mary Travers, but there's a cutout of Spock on it. Because she, okay, wasn't nice.
But her show was good. But
her
she
show
just
was
wasn't,
terrific. Yeah, okay. But it was interesting. She stood on the stage and said, you know, I played halls before, but I never played a hallway.
Oh, wow.
And then she said, I get the feeling if I step back three steps, I'd be in the toilet.
And she wasn't trying to be a stand-up comedian.
No,
she
was doing, yeah, no. But here's an interesting thing. Look at the Mavericks that were here. Freddie Hubbard was here. Charles Mingus was here. There isn't a more famous jazz violinist in the world than Stephan Grappelli. Nobody was mean to us. Nobody ever said anything rude like that.
They found it charming. Obviously.
Yeah, well, they found their roots.
Sure.
Folk singers started out in places like that, and then, yeah, if they're playing Carnegie Hall. But the point is, Odetta played Carnegie Hall, and she came here with great joy.
Fox went out one chilly night. He prayed for the moon to give him light. For he'd many mile to go that night. Before he reached the town of Pownau, Pownau, many miles ago that night, before he reached the town of. Well, he ran till he came to a great big bin. The ducks and the geese were there put in. He said, a couple of you are gonna grease my chin before I leave this town, oh. Town, oh, town, oh. A couple of you are gonna grease my chin before I leave this town, oh. Well, he grabbed a gray goose by the neck and he slung a duck across his back. He didn't mind, quack, 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 legs all dangling down, oh, down, oh, down, oh. He didn't mind, quack, 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 legs all dangling down, oh. Well, then old mother flipper-flopper jumped out of bed. She ran to the window and she put out her head. She cried, John, John, the gray goose is gone. The fox is on the town, oh, town, oh, town, oh. John, John, the gray goose is gone. The fox is on the town, oh. Well, then John, he ran to the top of the hill. He blowed his horn both loud and shrill. The fox, he said, I better flee with the kill, or they'll soon be on my trail, oh. Trail, oh, trail, oh. The fox, he said, I better flee with the kill, or they'll soon be on my trail, oh. Well, he ran till he came to his cozy den, and there were his little ones, 8, 9, 10. They said, Daddy, better go back again, because it must be a mighty fine town, no, town, no, town, no. They said, Daddy, better go back again, because it must be a mighty fine town, oh. The fox and his wife, without any strife, cut up the goose with a fork and knife. They never had such a supper in their life, and the little ones chewed on the bones, oh. Bones, oh, bones, oh. They never had such a supper in their life, and the little ones chewed on the bones, oh.
More with Bill Nolte on The Joint after a break. This is Spectrum West. We're talking with Bill Nolte about his nearly 50 years as proprietor of The Joint in Eau Claire. How soon after you had people coming in 74 did you realize that this was going to be it for a while?
Oh, yeah. I just kept going.
Yeah.
People would call, like this Mingus guy, you know, all of a sudden somebody's talking to me about booking Charles Mingus.
Yeah.
I'm talking to somebody on the phone and I said, guess who's coming in October? And he'd say, who? I'd say, Stephan Grappelli. And he'd say, stop it. Because those people were so enormous in reputation. How can you do that? Well, you can do it, mm-hmm, if you work for them to come here. And what was charming, they all liked it here so much.
Yeah.
There was a guy who was in the trumpet section of Mercer Ellington's band. They'd played Orchestra Hall. They were going to Lambeau Field, and they were here. And they were tuning their instruments in the afternoon to see about the room. And the trumpet player turned to one of my bartenders and said, that's a picture of Charles Mingus. My guy said, yeah. What's the picture up for? Oh, he said he played here. And the guy couldn't believe it. Mingus played here in this room. Yeah, he did. And the guy still didn't believe it because even to those guys, they were in famous bands. Freddie Hubbard was supposed to have a tough reputation. I never had it. Everybody was charming to us.
Good.
Really charming.
We're sitting in the joint with Bill Nolte, who is an octogenarian, ladies
yes.
and gentlemen.
You know, Al, I think you're the first person that's ever called me that.
It's Everybody, stature.
But, yeah.
You're venerable.
Yeah. Yes.
Which, by the way, the definition of venerable is accorded a great deal of respect, especially because of age, wisdom, or character.
If only that were true.
A lot of pressure there.
Pressure.
You brought up Jimmy Heath and the Heath Brothers a while ago. When I spoke with him a few years back before his appearance at the Eau Claire Jazz Festival,
right.
He easily recalled his performances here. You and I have just been talking about the wave of musicians and the phone calls that came in. Did people eventually tell their agents to book them here?
Well, if I ever had a situation where I was booking somebody that somehow didn't know about the place, you know, they always wanted half, for the most part, they wanted half down so you wouldn't back out. Well, I could do it, but that would make things a little tough. But, well, who's played there? Well, Larry Coryell was here, and Gary Burton was here, and so-and-so. Queen Ida was here. Then there's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it had been a bad thing with any of those bands, that would have been evident. I mean, they would have known.
Yeah. I have to apologize for asking this because you have to have been asked this a million times. Do you remember one night in particular that was just more fondly or vividly than any other?
No.
None, huh?
No. It was almost as though each show topped the one.
Oh, before. So it was like that.
It was like that. It was like, well, which was the best one? I said, that one we just had. If I were to tell you Yusef Lateef was in an amazing evening here, but then I look up and I see... you know, Red Rodney or Queen Ida or Charlie Musselwhite. Was Yusef Lateef better than it? No. They were really good. Yeah, they were really good, all of them.
So we
Freddie Hubbard played.
Who's this?
Freddie Hubbard, the trumpet player. Freddie had a terrible reputation for not getting along with people. Usually people would play an hour, and then they'd take a half-hour break, and they'd play another hour. Freddie played for almost 2 hours, took a 20-minute break, and played for 2 more hours and said, how was that? I said, well, I wasn't going to tell him he played for 4 hours because everybody was really loving it, you know? In other words, here's a guy that was supposed to be hard to get along with, and he wasn't.
What time did the music start back then?
We opened at 8:30, and we started at 9.
So he played till 1.
Damn near, yeah. Well,
it had to get a little toasty in here on some nights.
I didn't do many shows in the summer.
And you weren't putting AC in, and you couldn't.
No.
These were smoky places back then.
We asked people to not smoke during the performance, and they didn't. Except one time I was introducing a band, and I said, we'd like to ask you to please not smoke during the performance, and everybody laughed because two of the guitar players were on the stage smoking cigarettes. So that was funny, and everybody thought it was funny. But that didn't mean everybody lit up. It was okay.
I wasn't aware that you introduced groups. You kind of the MC guy.
Well, no, that's interesting. No, as much as I can't shut up now, I didn't talk then. I just introduced them. And I had some local friends, Jimmy Solberg, Bob Johnson, people who play music locally. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to start doing this. Should I say something before the band starts? And they all, to a man, said, absolutely introduce the band. Don't just walk off. And to this day, if I go to a club somewhere and the band just goes out and starts, it makes me angry because all my musician friends said, introduce the band. So I always did.
Okay.
And sometimes I would add an anecdote like saying, here are the Heath Brothers. They played here more times than any other musicians.
Uh-huh.
And that's when Jimmy said, yeah, except Odetta. You know, and that was nice to make that connection. I don't think I was ever up there longer than 3 minutes.
I'm trying to imagine you up there introducing the band in a leisure suit. You know,
I've never owned a leisure suit.
This was the '70s.
My whole life,
bell bottoms and puka shells,
you're breaking my heart.
This was the '70s, man.
But I didn't dress like the '70s. You know what I did dress like? As a matter of fact, there's an article that was written. When John Lee Hooker was here. No, it was not John Lee Hooker. It was Lonnie Brooks. A guy was going around following Lonnie Brooks' band, and it was in the Rolling Stone. In fact, the guy made a comment. I had on a tweed sport coat, brown corduroys with cuffs, not bell-bottoms, and penny loafers, and that's what I wore then. And if I were to introduce a band, the corduroys are worn out, but I'd probably have much.
Did the sport coat have elbow patches on it?
No,
that was huge.
It didn't.
Oh. So penny loafers without socks?
No, no. Socks, no, yeah. I didn't go sockless till later.
How about pennies in the penny loafers?
No.
No,
no.
Guys used to put dimes in them, too.
Yeah, dimes, they did.
To look cool.
I never did that. No.
See, yeah, and that doesn't surprise me.
Well,
you're not a fashionista, another,
I don't,
you know,
think I am, no. But who knows? No, that was interesting because the guy, I'll find that article that was in the Rolling Stone, he mentions that I was dressed that way because that put me right where I belonged. I graduated from college in 1963, but I wasn't going to turn to bell bottoms after that.
That's when you were a club, man. You had music coming in.
I've never called anybody man.
What did you think of
my whole life other than as a joke?
What did you think of disco?
I don't remember it.
That's not surprising.
I remember that
you were competing.
I remember this that John Travolta movie, the disco movie.
Sure.
Staying Alive.
Right.
That was not that amusing a movie.
No.
That kid falls off the bridge, in that movie.
I'm glad you clarified all that, because I didn't know how to picture Bill Nolte in the 70s.
Yeah.
And now I can. I was going to talk about jazz guitarist Emily Remler, the last musician listed on the brochure, November 16th, 1989. She died about 6 months later, and I was going to ask, was there a decision to quiet the music, and if so, where did it come from?
Well, the confluence of bad luck for everybody. Emily had been a heroin addict.
Yes.
She was married. He was also a heroin addict. But then they got clean. Guy in her band that she traveled with would go places with her. And whenever they would go to a big city, he would go to NA meetings with her.
Mm.
And she got asked to go to Australia.
That's where she passed away, wasn't it?
Yeah. And she couldn't afford to take the whole band. And she went to Australia. And, of course, heroin addicts, they know other heroin addicts all over the world. They think they're doing each other a favor. And so somebody found her, I'm sure. So that was the same season that if you look on there, you'll see Sun Seals is on at the end.
Mm-hmm. Couple times.
Yeah, and everybody really liked him and said, well, have him back. Everybody will come. And then nobody did. And then Emily died. And I thought, you know what?
It's time.
It's just time. And I called Odetta on the phone when I made that decision. And I said, Dad, I'm done. I can't. And there was a pause. It didn't last long. Maybe, you know how pauses last 3 seconds, but they seem like they lasted a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like a long time. And then she said, it's okay. You did your part. And then I felt absolved of quitting.
Yeah,
but I couldn't do it anymore. It was partially money, but it was like, I had a beer guy who delivered beer here for about 20 years through this whole thing. And every day after a show, 10 times a year, he'd say, how was the show? And I finally said to him, listen, Ben, please don't ask me that anymore.
Hmm.
You could come and find out, then you'd know how the show
there
was.
You are.
But I'm tired of talking to people who didn't take the time to come to ask me how it was.
Mm-hmm.
There's a line from Mark Twain, what he said, the guy wanted to be drunk on the smell of somebody else's cork. And I was tired of providing that cork. And that was part of it. I wasn't mad. I just didn't want to do
and
that anymore.
I have to say it's impressive you remember the name of the beer guy.
I made it up.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an alias.
But you remember Mark Twain right. Yeah.
Ben's a good choice.
And Monty Alexander, I just remember, was the name. Emily Remler and Monty Alexander were married. If you want to hear great jazz piano, Monty had been a heroin addict as well. Okay. And then when they split up, who knows whether it had anything to do with dope, but he was no longer with her, so she didn't have that support. And it made me, she was truly one of the most charming and delightful people that ever played here. She was just great. She hung around with us afterwards for hours.
And a great musician.
Oh, and wonderful. You know, there was a story she told. She was in New Orleans, or actually it was Herb Ellis told it. He saw that she was going to be here. And he said that he was in New Orleans and there came a phone call or something in one of the hotels. He's playing a date down there. And this girl called and said she was a guitar player and could she get a lesson? And he thought, oh boy, because that happens to them.
Yeah.
And so he said, well, okay, come up. And she came up and she had her guitar. He said, okay, play something. And she played something and he told the story on stage.
Hmm.
And he said, and I looked at her and he said, I can't teach you anything.
Hmm.
And I told that story when I introduced her. And I said, and that guitar player happened to be Emily Remler. And Emily came up to the microphone and she said, oh, Herb, he's so sweet. Because she hadn't heard that story. She knew it because she lived it. But apparently she hadn't heard that story told in public.
Let's listen to a little of the late Emily Remler on guitar and then our final segment with Bill Nolte. Emily Remler, the last musical guest to appear at the Joint in 1989. Let's wrap up our time well spent, albeit too early in the day to partake of anything bubbly, with curiosity about the future and a creative outlet for which Bill Nolte, the artist, there, I said it, Bill Nolte, the artist, is known. I want to ask you finally about ingredients of the Joint that are Nolte through and through. And here's the kicker. I was talking to one of your bartenders about this, and they said, well, you tell me how he answers this question.
Oh, okay.
I'm very curious and interested. I want to say, is the Joint bigger than Bill Nolte? Or are they inseparable? Because you're going to hang up the mop and the plunger one of these days. What happens then? Have you thought about that? Maybe not.
I'm going to close.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because this pandemic thing, you know, we were closed for a year and a half.
Yeah. And you're still here. You're back and
better
than ever.
Yeah, people said, well, what are you going to do about that? I said, well, people said, well, I'll take it over. I said, no, you won't take it over. It's
you.
Do you feel well, you know what? It's like, I know. People said to me when one of my dogs died, got old and died. I had three incredible dogs, and somebody said immediately within a week, are you going to get another one? I had the dog for 14 years. I said, you going to get another one? I said, let me ask you a question. If your little sister dies, are you going to get another one? Mm. I said, certain things you just don't feel right about getting another one. So I don't know about whether this, I know for a fact, one person said to me 15 years ago or something when I wasn't having all that good a time, they said, well, you could sell the place and you live upstairs. I said, do you honestly believe that I could live above a bar that I'd run for 40 years comfortably? There's no way. I would keep wondering, what are they doing down there?
Or 50 I'd years.
Look in the door. And now it's been 50, so no, I don't know.
Have you met anybody along the way who you said, you know, this could be a handoff?
I tried to give it to different bartenders 12 times for the future, and they thought it was a good idea until they thought about it, and they decided they didn't want to do it. So, I don't know. No.
I mean, it is you. It's who you are.
Yeah,
I mean,
although the interesting thing about that, which I kind of like, is about 8 or 10 years ago, I walked down the stairs there at I come here far less to drink than I used to. I'm not as amused by alcohol as I used to be. Uh-huh. And I was coming around this corner, and there was a group here probably in their early 40s, well-dressed, probably on their way up socioeconomically. Three couples, attractive couples. And I heard one of the women turn to the other five people and say, that's him. And I came around the corner, and I stood right there, and I said, you bet your boots, that's him. But that was a joke, of course, because that's him. What the hell does that mean? But now that doesn't happen.
Well, I'll do it.
Well,
gladly.
But you don't even know who Thomas Pynchon is, but you know who I am. I'd rather you knew Thomas Pynchon than I am. It's just, if a guy drives the school bus for 45 years, most of the kids know him. After that, two school years, and nobody remembers who that guy was. Let's just say I've been driving the school bus, and we don't need to carry that on any further.
There's so many wonderful pictures up here. Are we ever going to see one of you?
No.
I said that purposely as you took a drink because I wanted to see what would happen.
No, yeah. The same thing is, you know, this business we've talked about, the boxes and whatever I do for that gallery. People say, oh, you're going to put those up. No, we're not putting those in.
Are you still doing those, by
the way? Yeah, sure.
Okay, because I saw that.
Gallery's still down there.
Yeah. But your website's a little outdated, I think.
Yeah, it is. I haven't done much about that. You can go down there. You come in and ask for the key, and you can go look. If it works out the way Rose from, called about, I'm going to be one of a three-man show.
Oh, cool.
In January or February,
cool.
Whatever it is.
Good
along with...
We just want to hear about you.
Local guys. That's nice. That's nice.
Yes, it is. Your work is nice.
Yeah, thanks. I was realized the other day, I'd forgotten, but when that first Confluence show that was down there in the new gallery,
yep.
I won third prize in that show. Yeah.
Where's that award?
It's upstairs in the file. It's down there in the gallery.
I think it's down in the gallery.
Sitting on a table. But I thought, somebody said, oh, you won third. I said, oh, good. I felt good about that.
Good.
But what interested me was that I was happy about it.
What does that do for you, doing those boxes?
I don't know. Here's one thing you'll never hear me call myself. As an artist, every time I hear that, as a poet, I want to say, artist is a value judgment. And for you to decide that that's what you are, it's a little bit... As a guy who makes shadow boxes.
Okay.
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah, I do. As a guy who paints painting.
That sounds more Nolte.
Well, artist is patting yourself on the back. To me, to call yourself an artist is a value judgment. You've decided that what you make is art.
Huh.
Well, I'm not so sure whether that's true. You know, they just wrapped the Arc de Triomphe because Christo, the guy
sure.
Christo. Well, they just did it. It's a 15-year-old plan, and they did it. And so everybody stands there and looks at it and argues about whether it's art. I'm not so sure that's even a discussion that's worth having.
You won third place in an art gallery.
Yes,
you're an artist.
From having made a shadow box.
I can call you that.
Well, not when I'm around.
Right after I say, that's him.
That's him. there's one thing that you have fallen victim to. Whenever somebody new comes to work here, a new bartender, I'll have to talk to them just like this.
Yeah.
Not a lot of secrets here, right, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go to the other bartender and they'll say, what's he like? And they'll say, here's the deal. There's some quirky things to get done. But if you have any questions, you ask him. And he'll be perfectly happy to explain to you why we do things the way we do. They may not seem evident. For instance, over there, see that chair and then the next chair are separated? Well, because that's where one of the dogs always would go through there and sleep underneath that bench.
Ah.
Now, that dog's been dead for 20 years, but that's always left that way. So people say, well, why is it like that? He said, because the dog used to go there. And if that dog, that ghost dog ever comes back, I want him to be able to get through there.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, my bartenders ask him. He'll be perfectly happy to explain it to you. But let me give you a warning. He'll ask you whether you want the long answer or the short answer. Always take the short answer. About 7 or 8 years ago, we had some chipmunks. They lived underneath the floor.
Oh, cool.
And they would come out, Wes, the bartender, and there was a little chipmunk over there eating a peanut, and the health department lady was here. She said, oh, look at that. And Wes said, yeah. And she said, what do you think of that? And Wes said, well, I don't know. I think he's kind of cute. And she said, I think that's disgusting. And I thought, Alvin is disgusting? Alvin is not disgusting.
Alvin, certainly.
Now the chipmunks are gone. They decided to leave. But I thought, come on, we're not trying to get away with anything. In fact, we're pretty careful about what we do.
Bill Nolte, thanks so much.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Sure.
Say thank you, Al.
Oh, thank you, Al.
Well, I don't think it gets much better than that. Might be selfish on my part. I had a great time. Hope you did, too. Bill Nolte, stop in. Say happy birthday. Happy anniversary coming up, whatever. Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programming. That's important, especially right now during our fall member drive. You can make your impact on WPR programs with a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks a lot. That is it for this week. Next week, a book by a modern-day Horace Greeley. Spring Valley Theater people are at it again. Talk about some fall art tours and more. I'd like to thank Kate for promotion and Rick for regulation, and thank you guys for being in the audience. Couldn't have a better group. You can share email guest suggestions, spectrumwest@wpr.org, or visit wpr.org to listen to or load any and all past programs. Don't forget, tomorrow evening, Friday the 24th, it's Emergence, the first concert of a new season by the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra, 7:30 p.m. at Pablo Center. Go to pablocenter.org for your tickets. I'm Al Ross. See you next week.